When we look at the biblical record, certain things have deeper meaning and implication than we would assume. One of them is the notion of the sea. It's important to note that when we talk about the creation of the world, when we talk about God's movement through the creation of all that is, it tells us that in the beginning, the Spirit of the Lord moved across the waters. Why does it start with waters? Why is that the beginning point? Why is that square one? A lot of that has to do with the world that these people lived in. These individuals lived on the edge of the sea. Almost the entirety of the Mediterranean basin was the heart, the foundation of ancient civilization. Most of them lived within pretty close shot of the water. And the reason for that was that the sea represented life. It was a place where you could go and you could just pull food out of the water. It was a place that would give you water and salt and fish and food. But it was also incredibly unpredictable. It wasn't unusual that in places, and in this particular case, just on the Sea of Galilee, which is just a very, very large lake, you could have waves that were 5 foot, 10 foot, 15 foot tall. And, you know, for these people who made their living on the shore, there was this really strange thing that was a truism for a lot of these folks, and that is most of them didn't know how to swim. I find that fact amazing. The whole notion of a society that lives on the edge of an ocean, that many of whom make their living as sailors, as fishermen, as cargo haulers, who are on these ships and have no ability to swim whatsoever. It just amazing. I can't think of a more terrifying profession to be in than to be a professional fisherman who's going to be spending your life out on the water and knowing that you're surrounded by a substance that if you fall into it, you will die. And so in the ancient culture of Israel, the water represented chaos. It was chaos because it could be beneficial, it could be deadly, it could be beautiful, it could be terrifying. You just never knew with the sea which face that you would get on any given day. And it could change in a heartbeat. It could be a beautiful sunny day with blue skies, and the next thing you know, you blink your eyes twice and giant black clouds roll in and suddenly your ship barely is staying upward. And so when Jesus comes to walk across the water, it's not just that he's chosen a novel mode of transportation. It's not just that they look at it and go, wow, I didn't know you could do that. It's that Jesus is demonstrating his dominion over chaos itself, over uncertainty, over this force that is a part of their day-to-day life that is both a source of life and terrifying. Because here are the disciples in this ship. And again, mind you, a large percentage of our disciples are themselves professional sailors. They are fishermen who have dedicated their lives to being on the water. So being in a boat that is being tossed around by a storm is not a new experience for them, but it doesn't mean it's any less terrifying. And then Jesus comes out to them walking on the surface of the water, treating it like it's flat, dry ground. It's not that it's just impressive that he can walk on water, because that's not something people can normally do. It's impressive that he can rival and overcome the elements. And then he comes and they look out and they see him on the water. And this is sort of a testimony to exactly how bad the weather is. They don't recognize him. It's not just like they looked out and went, hey, there's Jesus, he's walking to us on the water. It was like, do you see somebody out there walking on the water through the mist and the rain and the clouds and the sea spray and the waves? It looks like there's someone out there. It's a ghost. Hey, that's a fair evaluation. If you're on a ship and you see someone bobbing up and down on the waves, Because let's face it, that's terrifying. Jesus is like, relax, guys, it's just me. By the way, Jesus spends a tremendous quantity of time telling people not to be afraid. In fact, all of God's chosen do. And then there's this great moment where one of the disciples, Peter, says, well, okay, let's test this theory. And to this day, I can't tell you why this is an effective test of the theory. I don't know why he says to Jesus, if it really is you, call for me and I will come to you and walk on the water. What if it wasn't Jesus? Is he just assured that he's going to be able to swim back to the boat in the middle of this storm? Is he one of those rare individuals who can swim? And I don't know about y'all, but I've been in a lake before when there was a really nasty current and we had people trying to swim back to our boat against that nasty current in an otherwise still-looking lake. And it was a little frightening because we were having a hard time getting people back to the boat. One of the kids that was in the water with us just thought it was hilarious and fun to stay out of the boat, because I'd warned everybody ahead of time, when you climb up the ladder, stay away from the propeller because it's sharp and you don't want to get hurt. And the adults, my wife in particular, who was in the water, kept trying to push my niece back towards the boat, and she kept laughing and swimming backwards. It was not a fun day because the current was pulling everybody. Now imagine doing that with 8-foot-tall waves. This is what Peter is risking in this moment. And Jesus says to him, sure, you want to get out of the boat and come walk to me? Go for it. That is a tremendous leap of faith on Peter's part. And he gets out of this boat. By the way, the only one of the disciples to do this. The rest of them, I'm sure, are looking at him like he's nuts. We're in a perfectly good boat. Stay in the boat. It's Jesus, fine, let him walk to us. No, Peter gets out and he begins to walk across the water. The chaos that water represents is no longer affecting him, and he is standing on top of it for a moment. And then he looks around and thinks, what in the world am I doing, and why am I doing this, and what in the world is happening around me, and oh look, there's a storm. Oh look, there's 8-foot waves. Oh look, what am I supposed to do now? And he begins immediately to sink. By the way, I want to circle back to that word. Matthew's stealing. He kept saying in this particular passage, immediately this, immediately that, immediately this other thing. For the record, that's Mark's word. If you ever read the Gospel of Mark very closely, you'll note that Mark uses the phrase "and immediately" over and over and over again. My English 101 professor from college would have a problem with the author of the book of Mark, because he would probably draw through that with red ink and say, choose a different phrase, Mark. You keep reusing this one too much. But now Matthew, who's not, by the way, "and immediately" guy. Matthew is the detailed guy. Matthew is the painstaking attention to minutia guy. Matthew's using this word now, immediately. And he wants us, the reader, to know that these things are not happening over a long duration of time. These things are happening right this moment and immediately. And I love this phrase. Peter, he says, in panic, my Lord, save me, I'm drowning. And it says, and immediately Jesus reached out his hand and lifted him up out of the water. So let's think about this for a moment. Jesus is off on the mountaintop. He decides to go to the disciples, and so he takes a walk, comes down the mountainside, walks across the water, walks out towards the boat, and they see him off in the distance, far enough away and enough disguised by the storm that they're having a hard time recognizing him. Peter asks for Jesus to call him to come and walk on the water, and Jesus says, sure, come on out. Peter begins to walk on the water and very, very quickly realizes he's literally in over his head and begins to sink, and he calls for Jesus' help, and Jesus immediately reaches out his hand and grabs him. Do you know what that means? That means from the moment that Peter set foot out of the boat onto the water, Jesus was already moving towards Peter. Jesus was already anticipating what was going to happen and was already running to help Peter. Because he was far enough away that he was hard to recognize. That means he wasn't right next to Peter when Peter got out of the boat. So how does Jesus get to Peter that fast? The answer is he's already on the way before Peter even knows he's in trouble. And then he lifts him up and he saves him. And he says this phrase, which I think if we think about it wrong, we're going to misunderstand what he's meaning. He says, "Oh, you of little faith." That's actually kind of, if you think about it in the wrong way, that's an awful thing to say to Peter. Peter is the only one of the 12 that climbed out of the boat to walk to Jesus. He's the only one that said, "If it's you, Lord, call me out." He's the only one that stood on the water for a period of time at all. By the way, I have a swimming pool in my house. I have repeatedly attempted it. It doesn't work. I mean, it works for a flash, for a fraction of a second after you hit that surface of the water, though. You're just down. Peter managed it for a moment or two. So why is Jesus chastising Peter for not having faith? It's not that Jesus is chastising Peter for sinking. It's that Jesus is chastising Peter for not realizing that he was going to be there to save him. I mean, long story short, Jesus wants us all to understand that we don't have to panic when life gives us troubles, when life gives us problems, when we struggle. Because Jesus knew what was going to happen before it happened, and he's already come to us. He's already made the run. His hand's already out. That's how the immediately part works. Jesus doesn't chastise Peter because he sank. Jesus chastises Peter because he did not trust Jesus to save him when he sank. You may be walking on the waters of some chaos. I think of all of our students and teachers who are just a week or two away from returning to school. They're definitely walking on some waters of chaos. I think of all of my friends and family members who've gone through health scares and are currently going through health crisis. They're definitely walking on some chaotic waters. I think of all of the people out there who are trying to figure out life, all of our young folks who are figuring out how to do adulting. They're walking on some waters of chaos. And God doesn't expect us to walk on those waters of chaos and hold ourselves up by our own sheer force of will. He expects us to have faith. Faith that he will save us when we sink. Faith that he will lift us up when we need to be lifted up. Faith that whatever it is that we face in life, when the chaos does grab our attention and overcome us, that he wants to save us. And that there will never be a time that he won't already have run to our side to hold us up. So as we think about the witness of the saint who walked on water, it is just as important to think about the saint who was pulled up out of the water by the hand of Jesus that was already there and led back into the boat to safety. Whatever you're going through in your life right now, whatever struggle you've got, whatever your chaos is that you're trying to walk across, just know that Christ has already run to you, that he's already holding his hand out to you, and that he is ready to lift you back up and set you on your feet, and that you have nothing to worry about because Christ is and always will be with you. And that in that moment of panic when Peter forgot that, that was what Jesus wanted him to understand was the mistake. Not the sinking, but the worrying that there would be no one there to rescue him when Jesus was already there. Amen.